Para-X Radio, your source for everything paranormal and beyond.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and its guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X Radio Network, its affiliates, its sponsors, or Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. Paranormal Encounters podcast series is educational, entertaining, and intriguing. Be careful what you wish for.
Careful what you wish for. Ever get that feeling that something might be hanging around?
Good day, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. The producer and host of this series is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. She will be joining you shortly. Before we meet Dr. Schutz, let me give you some background about her. She is a published author and academic, former legal investigator, and paranormal enthusiast, who holds 4 advanced degrees in the area of higher education and applied communications, with a secondary interest in parapsychology and life-after-death issues. Dr. Schutz travels to haunted locations all over the United States and Europe, seeking out situations to investigate. A sensitive intuitive, Dr. Schutz has had numerous experiences with the paranormal since the age of 9, with her most frightening and recent experience being an oval-shaped floor-length mirror cycling around in front of her in a haunted room she had stayed in. She has photographed apparitions in a screened window, been kicked up into the air, been sat on, choked, put into a trance, attacked, and continuously sought out by the unknown who want to share a message with her. From her personal experiences and in interviewing others, she has written nearly 100 illustrated stories in her book series entitled Paranormal Encounters. The Paranormal Encounters podcast series will initiate with Dr. Schutz first discussing a variety of interesting topics, as well as her personal experiences that will evolve into other segments for your interest, enjoyment, and education. Each podcast episode will be approximately 45 minutes long. Dr. Schutz welcomes your questions and comments. How to contact her or ways to order her books will be mentioned at the end of this podcast.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
And thank you again for listening to another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series as published by Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the writer, the producer, and the host of this show. Tonight, I thought we would add a bit of a twist to this show, and I am going to interview a guest who has 2 very special gifts. His first gift is the ability to find missing people, and his second gift, is to sense and see spirits. Mr. Peter James Haviland, who resides in Texas and has been seen on the Travel Channel, is a private investigator who uses forensic hypnosis in witness recall, allowing people to access their memories from the past or from traumatic experiences. Haviland is also an advanced certified clinical hypnotherapist with 33 years in the business of parapsychology and forensic hypnosis. He is frequently called upon to aid in cracking cold cases and review files that have long been forgotten about sitting on a very dusty shelf. We have talked about consciousness a little bit on this show. We've had some guests who have also talked about consciousness, but this is just simply another aspect of it. It's the ability to tap into one's memory. Haviland helps people under hypnosis to relieve fears, unwanted behaviors, and strengthens parts of their personalities. He also helps people to recall traumatic details of their experiences, often leading to cracking cold cases. His second gift, the ability to sense and see spirits, well, for this, he uses a more fact-driven approach, and I think we'll talk to him a little bit more about that during the show. In 1955, he and his wife founded Lone Star Spirits, and we'll ask him a little bit more about that too as well. For paranormal cases, he works with mediums, putting them into a trance, and from this, he contacts the energy through the medium, never giving that person any background facts or details or even confirmation, so that whatever comes through is authenticated. His business is called Red Oak Hypnosis. Mr. Haviland, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Say, Pete, where might we be Skyping with each other from this evening?
I am in the Lone Star State in Houston, Texas.
Oh, the Lone Star State of Houston, Texas. Now, I'm not really sure if Texas gets the honor or other places in Texas gets the honor for that famous barbecue we all hear about, but eventually I'll get down there because we all know all over the Midwest that everything is bigger and better in Texas. So glad to have you on this show. I don't want to forget about this though, before we get too much into the interview, because sometimes we get to talking so much that we don't get a chance to get to important details. So I want you to tell our audience if you have any books out on Amazon or what you've been up to so they can kind of get a feel for what you've been doing.
Sure. I wrote a chapter in a book called Talking with the Dead that's put out by Whitechapel Press. I wrote it on the Presidio La Bahia in Goliad, where Fannin and his men were executed. It was a pretty interesting research project. Let's see, I've been on the Travel Channel twice.
Wow.
And let's see, I think one was for Ghost Stories.
Wow.
And another one was for Jim Rose's Twisted Tour when they came through Houston, and that was back in mid-90s, late-90s.
Was that
on the last one?
Was that about ghosts too, or paranormal?
The Twisted Tour, they came through, and I took them to a haunted place.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, we kind of talked about what I do, how to look for ghosts and things like that. It was kind of just it was maybe about a 5-minute piece.
Oh, really cool. So that chapter you wrote in that book, is that still out on Amazon, do you know?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is.
You can get it on Amazon. You can also get it on, I think, Whitechapel Press.
Okay, so it's called, is the title of the book Talking with the Dead, or?
Yes, it is. Oh, okay. Talking with the Dead.
Okay. No, that sounds really interesting. So I love that.
It's 13 different investigators throughout the United States that wrote on different investigations that they did. So yeah, it's a pretty interesting read.
Oh, really cool. Now, do you have a website that people, or a couple websites that people can go to if they want to look you up or get some more information about you?
Sure. Lone Star Spirits Paranormal Investigations. That's my team's site, and that's www.lsspi.org. And then my hypnotherapy office, which is redoakhypnosis.com.
Okay. No, that sounds okay. So that's good. I think I'm going to be bringing up in the interview your Lone Star Spirit. So that one's still pretty active. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am. We've been around since I want to say about 95 or 96.
Oh, wow.
And we had a presence on the web. I think it was in 97.
Oh, cool. Cool.
To current.
Oh, no, that's cool. Well, hopefully we'll get into some of these interesting stories as we move along here too. And thanks for that information. And again, so my listeners do not bombard me with questions about how to find you. What they need to do is you need to go to, you could go to two places. First of all, this segment will air, if you're listening on Podomatic, this segment will air on August 30th at 11 o'clock p.m. to 12 midnight Eastern Standard Time. If you're on Podomatic, you're listening to it right now. You can also download it on Podomatic by going to www.krschutz1paranormalencounters.podomatic.com. And if that's too long of a thing for you here, you can also wait for ParaX, www.para-x.com. And what you do is you go up to the link on your computer to show archives. You will click on it, scroll down to Paranormal Encounters podcast series, click on that, and this will bring you directly into Podomatic, where you can subscribe for free, listen to all the other episodes I've had, especially with my guests and a lot of different topics, and of course, download this current episode with Pete, which I think is going to be really interesting tonight. So again, if downloading is free, just go ahead and go into Podomatic and you will find that thing, that site. Okay, so let's begin, Pete. I'm going to start off here by rolling with the first question. And okay. So here we go. First of all, I think the field that you're in, that you're currently in, is very, very interesting. And I thought it would be a good place to start with your telling us just a little bit about yourself and how you became interested in either the paranormal or parapsychology. So I'm going to take it from there, Pete.
Sure. I think everybody has some type of event that's happened to them to kind of get into the study. Mine was, I was watching monster movies when I was a kid, and I can't even remember what it was, but I remember the room getting cold, and I remember my dog turning around and sitting up, and the hair on her back all just stood up. She was quiet. She started shaking. I turned around to see what she was looking at, and I saw my grandfather walking down my parents' house's stairs. And that was all well and fine, but he had passed like the year before. So I got up and I walked over there. Why? I mean, I was a kid, and I wasn't scared of him in life, so really didn't know what was going to happen. But I went over there, and as I saw him move down the stairs, there was no sound, there was no creaking, there was no like weight. He was just very, very silent. He was solid as you or I. And as he came down, he kind of made a left turn and walked into our hall closet for some reason, kind of walked through the door. And I went over to it and I opened the door. I don't know what I was going to see. Wasn't him, but I did see that there was these I don't know exactly how to explain to it. There were like these big round bronze plaques that he brought over from Italy, and he had hung those in the two houses that he had built in New York. So it was that point in time that I just kind of thought that he walked that way because those were his possessions. That's the first thing I really thought, not thinking about energy and all that other stuff, because like I said, I was about 12 years old, so I really didn't know any of that stuff. But it fascinated me, and I started reading every book I could on haunted houses and ghosts. I started picking up a lot of stuff by Hans Holzer. I mean, he had been writing since the late 60s, if I'm not mistaken, and I just started picking stuff up from him. Let's see, Harry Price, D. Scott Rogo, you name it. The names became more, I knew more about the names as I got older, but to me, they were just authors at the time. And Borley Rectory just fascinated me when I was a kid too. Marianne was talking with the spirits and the rectory and all that, just fascinated me. So you know, everywhere that I went, I had a book on ghosts or haunted houses. And for the longest time, I was known as the ghost boy, which was fine with me. I didn't care. I had gotten into gotten into high school, and my psychology teacher was really cool. So he let me write on hauntings and things like that because he saw that I really enjoyed it. And he did. I guess later when I discussed that with him, he said he wanted me to keep an interest in psychology and parapsychology rather than to chase me off with a lot of the dry book learning, which you know you still need to know anyway because you need to know the theory. But he allowed me to do that on special projects, and I'm glad he did because it's kept me interested in it for as long as I've been doing it now. Got into college, and my prof was just as cool and let me do that as well. And I had my first experience going into a house when I was 18, and I had heard that there was a house in Fox Run over here down here in Texas. It was a subdivision, and I had heard that this lady was hearing and seeing things. And I can't remember how I heard about it, but I did, and I had gotten the address from, again, I don't can't remember how or from whom, but I went over there and I introduced myself to her, and she was really cool. I mean, I guess she thought it was fascinating that I wanted to observe, and you know, she was kind of she kept by herself a lot too, so I guess she liked the company. So you know, I would go over there like once or twice a week, and we would sit and talk, and you know, sometimes we heard something, sometimes we didn't. The one day that she told me that she was getting ready to move, she was going to be living with her daughter, and she was packing up her house, and she seemed real sad about that. And as she told me that, I heard what sounded like moving boxes upstairs. So I went upstairs again. I guess I'm kind of stupid. I run towards it. Other people run away. So I went upstairs and went into this room that she had it made like a library. I mean, there was all books and stuff in there. And when I went in there, I turned the corner and I got hit in the head with a book. And I picked it up and it was gone with the wind, of all things. So, you know, thinking about it now, I'm thinking it might have been some type of communication with me, either through her with poltergeist phenomena or I don't know, maybe something intelligent that was letting me know how she kind of felt.
Yeah.
But at that time, I didn't really know. I just got hit with a book.
Pete, let me jump in. I'm going to jump in and ask you a couple questions. Because a lot of this is very interesting, and I could. So I'm going to jump back, and then I'm going to jump forward, okay? So I want to just jump back for a second with when you saw your grandfather. We're going to go all the way back there, okay? Sure. Now, most people want to know, when they see a solid figure like that, what was the expression on his face when he looked at you?
You know, the best I can explain it is kind of expressionless. I mean, he was just kind of just looking forward, you know. And as I didn't hear anything, I didn't see anything. He didn't look like in the movies of static, you know, moving through it or whatever. He just looked like a person walking down the stairs in silence.
When he moved.
Well, I was going to say, when he moved through the door, it was more of a dissipation. It wasn't like, you know, a pop or it wasn't anything. It was just kind of like he lost energy. I mean, he got to the door and it kind of lost energy and it just kind of just dissipated.
Right, like he melted like he melted into the door, kind of.
Kind of like that, yeah. Kind of like that.
Well, and the reason why I know this, I haven't seen a solid figure, but I was in a haunted castle a few years ago, and probably extremely terrifying. I've a lot of the experiences I've had over in Europe have actually been terrifying, but for some reason I'm still living without a heart attack. But the situation I saw, I didn't see the solid figure, but there are actually in front of me when I used my ultra infrared camera, video camera, and I was playing around with it, and I opened it up, and I saw through the viewfinder two or three, there were orbs flying around, like dancing in front of me, and I just started to immediately start to sweat. Well, what was interesting to me is that, okay, so I'm filming this, and I'm thinking, oh my God, please don't kill me, whoever you are. And of course, my husband's in the other room, so he's not really experiencing what I'm experiencing sitting on the bed. But anyway, right, they decided, these orbs, they were dancing around in front of me. They kind of went in and out of the bathroom, which was pitch dark at the time, back into the room, which was low light. Then they spread, okay, like a mist. They spread probably about, I would describe it to be like 4 inches in diameter, each one, and then they went literally right through the door. And I saw them go right through the door, literally. And I thought, before they did that, though, they came toward me, like literally toward me, towards the video camera. And later I discovered that I had absolutely no footage of that at all. They completely erased what was on my video camera. So the reason why I'm asking about your grandfather, when he went through that door, yes, I know what it's like to just kind of see things just kind of melt and just kind of go through, but I'm sure you must have wondered, did he ever come back after that, or was that the only occurrence you ever had of him?
I had seen him periodically through the years. Another time was when I had injured my leg playing football, and he came to me and told me it was going to be okay, and then just kind of dissipated again, and that's the first time I heard him speak. Now, also, my grandmother, whom I never met, she passed when my mom was young. She came to me at the same time, not at that same time that he did, but at a different time when I had hurt that leg, and she sat down on my bed, and I felt the weight on the bed, and she looked at me and she touched my leg, and my leg got cold, but she didn't say anything. She just kind of smiled, and then she just dissipated too.
Interesting. So how old was she when she passed?
So, I mean, I don't know if it was because I was in a lot of pain, and I was broadcasted. I don't know.
Was this in the same room that you were in before? Now you were downstairs
with my grandfather coming down the stairs and watching TV. No,
right.
I was in my bedroom.
Right. But the same house, right?
Same house.
Yeah. Was that house owned by your grandfather and grandmother?
No, it was not.
Interesting.
We moved down here into Texas, I want to say about 77 or 78. Parents bought it from somebody.
So they actually passed away in a different state, or the same state, correct, different area. Was it the same?
Well, my grandfather passed away in Maryland.
Okay.
Because he moved from New York to Maryland to follow us when we lived in Maryland.
Okay.
My grandmother passed away in New York.
Oh, boy. And so you were in Texas, and they followed you there.
Yeah.
That is very interesting.
I don't know so much if it's followed me or followed my mom.
Well, that's true. Followed your mom, right? No, but your package deal there. So very interesting.
Yeah.
Now let's go fast forward back to where you were discussing some of the incidents that you had experienced, and I had a question. Of course, I just completely lost. My mind just went blank as to where you ended. Where did you end on that story of yours?
I do that too.
it's called old age. Sorry, you know. I'm just like, oh, where were we? I don't even know where I am right now. Who am I? You know.
I think I was talking about. I mentioned that uh, I uh, in college, my prof let me write on haunted things too.
Right.
I had mentioned that about the experience I had when I was 18.
Right.
Now, as far as other things, I mean, it was I had always, let's say, at that age, all you can do is really observe and try to get a grasp at what you're looking at or what you're dealing with. I had always wanted to work with the police, and I thought hypnosis was fascinating. So later on, after college and so forth, I ended up getting my certification on hypnosis. And because I wanted to work with the police on cold cases and missing children and missing adults and things like that. When I did that, I've actually had the opportunity to do that, work with police on missing cases. And I'm currently working a cold case from back in 1987, 88.
Oh, wow.
Of a family friend that was found murdered.
Oh, really?
For the family, yeah. So, and they asked me to look into it. And, you know, and through that, I had learned between learning how our mind works and how we operate under stressed conditions and things. It was at that point that I started really getting into learning about poltergeist phenomena and how we ourselves can create phenomena. And when finding the trigger of what's going on, being able to, under hypnosis, correct or remove the issue and replace it with a positive reality. And I've had haunting stop, and I just thought that was fascinating. You know, between, you know, stress conditions or issues that haven't been taken care of with counselors or psychologists or psychiatrists, you know, being able to do that. And I've been working with that between my investigations with, you know, with haunting phenomena, as well as, you know, with the private investigating stuff that I do, and the hypnosis. And it all kind of just came all together. And, you know, I worked with a lady one time that had just left a really, really bad marriage. He was very controlling. He was monitoring her through the internet of what she was doing at the house, because he planted all these little cameras and stuff around the house. And she just started wigging out. I mean, because he would call her and say, you know, why did you do this? You know, why were you back there doing that? And she just, you know, she just was beside herself. So she finally divorced him, and she moved into a home that she was originally going to try to flip and flip and sell it, but she ended up liking the house, so she stayed there. But you know, then she started feeling like she was being watched constantly, and you know, and through placing her under hypnosis, I found out that it had a lot to do with her, what had happened with her husband, and she just became really hypersensitive about living there, and fearful of being watched. So I placed her under and removed all the reasons and issues of being hypervigilant, and removed any and all issues as far as being watched. And she didn't have an issue after that in the house.
And this was through hypnosis?
Through hypnosis, yes.
Okay, what I think I want you to do, now that, this is interesting. I mean, I'm just kind of taking it all in here, and I'm thinking about things that you're saying. One of the things I want you to tell the audience is, I want you to tell them a little bit more about the act of hypnosis and what that kind of entails, so they understand that when you put somebody under, what exactly are you doing? So can you explain hypnosis a little bit?
Sure. Hypnosis is kind of like a guided meditation, and I take a person into a place of what's called somnambulism, and that is the place between sleep and wake state. This is when you're the most suggestible. And when I do that, then I, if we're dealing with something that you know, for instance, when I had placed her under, I had her look at anything and everything on a screen, so she didn't have to relive any of the trauma or the drama that she was dealing with. I had her look at it and tell me what was the issues or what was bothering her. And then I, through that, through suggestion, then I would have her remove that and replace it with a positive reality. Positive reality is basically, you know, once you remove something, you have to place something in. So if it was negative, you want them to think of what instead of the negative that you're asking them to either remove or forget or to put behind a wall, for the lack of a better term, that they now think of something positive, you know, like you are now living in this beautiful home. Nothing else will bother you. Everything that you do will become more and more positive, and it will get better day by day. You know, something along those lines. So they have something to think about when that trigger comes up, and it kind of reroutes. Does that make sense?
Right. So if somebody is and I'm familiar a little bit with hypnosis, because when I was younger, I needed to be. I had severe anxiety issues, terrible, where I was causing ulcers and stuff. And so I had to undergo hypnosis for probably a good several months. And I was always fascinated by the fact that, you know, like my arm would raise up in the air and I would have no control over it. It did feel lighter than a balloon. And I was just amazed at you know, being put under. But one of the things that I was challenged with back then was when I was having very anxious, stressful situations. It didn't matter if it was in school, it didn't matter if it was at home or whatnot. Once I went back into the environment that was causing this to begin with, I found it really difficult to be able to go into a happy place. It's almost like everything that was positive was completely undone, and I went right back to where it was before. So it was kind of challenging with somebody like me, because I had hoped that, you know, you could like forget it and have the good replacement, as they say. But I don't know. I suppose it just depends on the person and what they're undergoing. So, but hypnosis is very, very, very fascinating.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And the thing that I would probably do if I was treating you is that I would look at the issue that is making you have that anxiety, and then we would chip away at it constantly. So this way, as you put yourself into the same situation, it would become less and less, because we would constantly work on that to break that wall down.
Right.
Sounds like to me that you still had some, there was some of that anxiety still behind a wall that wasn't released.
Oh no. Yeah. Until I actually put myself in different environments. And this includes many, many high schoolers would be able to relate to what I'm saying here, and I'm sure.
I understand.
Yeah,
I had issues with that myself in high school.
Yep, and the minute I took myself out of that particular environment and changed it, but of course, you know, things do follow you wherever you go. But the thing is, it started getting a little bit better. But you know, things would come up, and it's just human nature that triggers would happen, and then somehow you'd be brought back. It's no different than, you know, like people when they listen to music. They hear a particular song they maybe haven't heard for years and years and years, and it brings them right back to that very same situation, you know, that they were in. I find all this very interesting. And so you were trained to be a hypnotic, or to do hypnosis on people.
Yes.
You were also trained, I was reading your biography a little bit, forensic.
Oh, I'm in trouble now.
Yeah. I was going to say, everybody go to his website and then write him a nasty. Oh, anyway, sorry. Sorry, sorry, Pete. I had to.
Time.
Yeah, it's like, how dare you, you know? So, but you meant one thing that was mentioned in there is like, okay, so one of the things very fascinating about how you managed to get into finding like missing people and stuff like that. How did you cultivate your skill to get to that level, or do you feel like you've always had an innate ability to be real sensitive to things, and it just is more of a natural thing to you. What do you think about that? How did you get yourself to get further into this, to be able to get it all the way to the missing people aspect?
Well, I had volunteered in a 501(c) to be an advocate for missing children, and I had started off sending out flyers and stuff like that into different areas and things like that. But then I started speaking with a couple of the private investigators that actually worked the cases, and they became really interested because of my background. Because at that point in time, I was a hypnotherapist, and I had told them about my work with some forensic hypnosis and witness recall, and they had brought me in because of that and my ability to speak with people and try to bring as much information out as I could. And I had the opportunity to work on quite a few cases with talking with family members and police on cold cases or missing children or missing adults. Even that, I had one case that there was a girl that had been murdered, and they couldn't find her body. But I had the opportunity to speak with the last witness, and I was able to pull out some information that they didn't have on the original interview. And when I do that, I don't ask leading questions at all. I'll just ask them straight out. You know, what are you seeing? Can you give me detail? And I go through that because if I have to testify, I have to not only show that that I understand what I'm doing, but they have to also see what I've done and make sure that I'm not asking leading questions. So that's very important for credibility. So I mean, that's one of that. So they have since had some really, really good leads from what information I gave them, and they're beginning to think that they know where she is now. I forgot the second part of the question you asked me. I'm sorry.
So did I. My old age is clicking in again here. Because I'm so interested in what you're saying that I'm sitting here going, God, I got a million questions I want to ask this guy. Well, the thing is about hypnosis, though, and of course, I agree with you. I worked in law for 8 years as I was actually an undercover investigator, and so I got to go and spy on people. But you know, the thing is, and then I got to make my own judgment.
Yeah,
I was going to say, don't worry, Pete. I'm not coming down there yet to spy on you. But I do agree with you about the fact that I think it takes a remarkable talent to be able to bring out details from individuals who have been traumatized or have seen something, and their memories go into lock because they just, you know, to relive some of those experiences can be actually very, very painful. And so for you to do it as gently as you can without leading the individual and messing up the credibility aspect, that's very, very important and key to what you do with your own credibility as well. So I think I read that you were very successful at many of your cases because of your ability to do that. Am I right?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I've done well with it so far. I don't say that to brag or anything like that. I'm rather proud of my accomplishments.
I think you have a gift that, you know, that there's, I call it few and far in between. There's those who have real talent and those that have been, I'm not even going to use the word blessed, because some people would not say it's a blessing to have some of these, I'm going to call it psychic type gifts, or the ability to sense things more deeply than others, because they too can also be plagued with trying to close or block those things up just to keep their lives in check. Have you found any of this to be bothersome to your living a normal life?
Well, you know, I have, it's taken me a while, but I've learned how to put on different hats, and I've learned to be able to separate myself from what I'm working with to what I do when I come home. It's taken me a long time to get there, it's actually helped out a whole lot. I don't know how I would actually say about, you know, being able to turn things on or turn things off, because I mean it's you really can. I mean if you have an ability, it's there. It's just a matter of trying to control what you have when you have it. I mean, I don't know how other than to describe it, really. It's just, you just try to put on that different hats when you need to.
Yeah.
You know, for instance, when I'm working on a paranormal case, if I see something, you know, I'm skeptical by nature. I always have been. And from what everything I've learned and how things work and what information people need and stuff like that, I've always been the type of person that if I can't research it or if I can't prove it or show it, chances are it's probably not valid, or if it is valid, it's something that you need to put more time on. So if I'm in a residence and I have, for instance, I see a person in the hallway, I would rather be the person that puts the camera on it and direct team members to take pictures or do an EVP or something like that, because I'm the type of person, names, dates, places, and events. That's what's going to get things done. That's what people are going to believe. You know, it doesn't really matter about what I believe. If you're trying to work on a case, it's trying to get your point across to the people that you're working the case for.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't really necessarily mean, whether I want it to be or not, it's immaterial.
No,
the evidence has to follow. The evidence has to prove what you're doing.
No, I agree with that, because when I worked in law, and when I've worked also as a college instructor for several years and taught, communication classes and all that stuff. One of the classes I've taught was speech communication and how this has I always told my students, I said, your opinion doesn't matter here. And of course they'd be all offended by me saying that, because how dare I say that their opinion doesn't matter. You know, opinions do matter, of course. They help us lead us on cracking cases and understanding theory. But the problem is that in the end, people listen to numbers, they listen to facts, they listen to hardcore everything, and anything
and
that...
listen to the bottom line.
Exactly. And a lot of times people have a tendency, to not want to hear some of those things, but they will listen to that, and they will grab onto that, and they will cling to it. So I completely understand what you're talking about regarding fact versus, well, this is what I think. Well, back it up with something, because no one's going to listen to it otherwise. So, yes,
exactly.
Went through that many times, and when we had to present evidence all the time. So I wanted to bring up an intro. This Houston Press did an article on you, which I thought was very, very interesting. And one of the things...
Oh, now I'm in trouble.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yes, I blew your case here, there, Pete. Here we go. I'm coming after you. One of the things I was really interested is there was a picture that they showed with the ghost cat. And I wanted you I wanted you to talk a little bit about... Why I found that interesting is because there's so much hype out there regarding what's real and what's not. Okay, so yes,
I'm very skeptical about what's out there.
You have to be.
A lot of the TV stuff is a lot of bunks. Bunk. I mean, as you know, as an investigator.
Yeah.
I am drama sells soap.
Yeah, I know. Well, and the thing is that, I used to get teased all the time for shooting orbs, and I would say, no, these orbs are actually communicating to me. These are real orbs, blah, blah, blah. And a lot of cases I can tell what's real and what's not and blah, blah, blah. And that kind of orb theory, people just hate the orbs thing because they think it's all a bunch of dust or water particles. And it's not always, because, you have to know what's real and what's not. But that ghost cat.
No, it's with me, it's a case by case basis. I mean, if you see them, you know, and if you're having a feeling about it, or you feel like something's communicating with you, and it fits with what you're watching, what you're seeing, yeah, I mean, I would accept that. Now, unfortunately, a lot of folks out there right now don't have a lot of the training. You know, so when they see something, I mean, they jump at it because they're excited, which I can understand. I mean, getting into anything for the first time, you know, and you get something, I mean, you're gonna be really excited. But a lot of them don't understand the theory and the reality of all of that stuff out there. So, you know, there's only a really small percentage that really do now versus what used to be probably about in the 80s or the 90s.
Well, and adding to that, too, we have more paranormal type shows on television now, which people cling to very, very directly. And for me, when I watch these shows, if I have had similar experiences and I know what they're talking about, I know that they have to sometimes dramatize or give it up, because the thing is if it gets too boring, you know, a lot of times to get any evidence in a room, you have to sit there for hours in the dark and you're just like falling asleep. But then, you know,
I worked a case one time for a year, you know, and the thing is that, you know, you don't live there 24/7. You're only there for a small amount of time. So you can go there as many times you can, or they will allow you to go find the information that they want or need.
Exactly.
So, you know, it takes a long time.
Exactly. To get anything. And sometimes you get it right away. In my case, I always seem to get it right away and then mm-hmm. nothing after that. But I will tell you of a time, though, when I took a picture of my sister outside in the shade with a camera that had print film in it, and an orb did show up over her heart area. And my sister had always complained about having something feeling like there was a hole in her heart area. Now, when she was born, of course, she was born with a hole in her heart, but as she aged, those things usually close up. And so no doctor has been able to figure out what on earth is going on with her. But when that orb showed up, very large, over her heart area, no flash, right, outside, sitting on a bench under a shade tree, I showed her the picture. In fact, I think it's in one of my books. I'm pretty sure it is. I said, when orbs come to me, they come to me in very weird ways. And I said, this is not a dust particle because there's no flash involved, but it's right over your heart. And I said, you need to go back to the doctor because obviously there's something wrong. Now, that's not to get everybody all shaken up when orbs show up on their family members in pictures or above their heads or whatnot. You have to really know that it's not dust, not some kind of, you know, moisture, not some kind of whatever flying around, and it just so happens it got captured in front of your lens. But you have to be able to know the difference. That's about all there. But I want to ask about that ghost cat.
And you knew your sister's background, so when that showed up,
it had to have been a
spirit trying to show you something.
Oh yeah, I knew it. I mean, I knew because I'm highly, highly sensitive, and I always tell people, if there's a ghost in the area, it will come to me, it will speak to me, it will show me something, it'll move something, it'll speak in my app, it'll do just about anything, it'll try to take possession of me, it'll try to put me in a trance. There's all kinds of things, and I know that, and so I have had to learn over the last few years, after putting myself into some very, very scary situations in doing investigating of paranormal by myself. Well, at least I've had my husband in the room on most cases, but the situation is I've lived in haunted houses. You know, I've moved to a house now that I absolutely ban all paranormal from even wanting to think about coming in here. I was locked out of the house one day and I chewed that one out and basically said, get out. So I haven't had any problems since. But I will tell you, like you, although I think you're a little bit more sensitive than me, we do know when the paranormal is around us. So that ghost cat,
yes.
I want to talk about that ghost cat though. So that ghost cat, okay, so on this, in his article, they showed a picture, and they showed a picture of a very bright, whitish, what appeared to be a ghost cat. So can you tell me, so I don't know, obviously someone shot that you were with investigating on something, but...
That was actually... I took that shot.
Oh, you took that shot?
I was with... Yeah, what had happened was is that our next-door neighbor was getting ready to... she was... her daughter came down, and our next-door neighbor... let me preface this. The next-door neighbor was like a second grandmother to us. You know, ever since we had moved down here to Texas, we met her. She was the first person we met, and she always was part of the family after that. When she started having issues with her mind, she was starting to lose some senility. Her daughter came down to move her to Ohio, and when they were packing her up, they took her cat and they euthanized the cat, and which broke my heart, because I found out when they took the cat up to the vet. I called and they had just put her down 2 hours before, because I was going to take the cat. But after that, when they moved her, another family bought the house, and we knew them too, because I grew up with them. I got a phone call at like 3 a.m. telling me that basically all hell was breaking loose at the house. They heard what sounded like a scream. They heard what sounded like a bell, and Pepper had a bell on her collar. They asked me to come over, so I had gone over there. And we were walking around the house and stuff, and I was getting some really high electromagnetic field readings and a lot of cold spots. And we walked into the kitchen. That's where that shot is in the kitchen. And I heard a bell, and the two people who own the house, that's when they put their hand out and they go, "I feel something. It's cold right here." And the bell rang again. And that's when I took the shot. And then you could see it looked to me, I thought it was a tail, coming up. But that's what we got. I mean, that was three of us. You know, we heard all three of us heard the bell. All three of us felt the cold spot, and I could verify it by temperature to show that there was like a 20 degree drop right there, and electromagnetic field went through the roof just before I took the shot. So I'm thinking that the cat was still at the house. And after they moved out of the house, nothing to do with anything that we were there doing. They just had another house opportunity. I had heard from the owners that are in there now that they hear a bell every once in a while in there too. So I think the cat stayed.
I think that's it. Well, and I can honestly tell you that cats can still come and go after 12 years in a former house, previous house that my husband and I lived in. I was actually in Minnesota at the time that this was happening in Indiana. And he actually had what felt like a cat jump up on his legs when he was sleeping at night. And he had asked me if any animals had passed away in that house. And it just so happens I contacted the former owners. And, of course, you know, they're a little sheepish. But they did tell me that they had a cat die in that house 12 years earlier. And that it liked to jump up on the left-hand side of the bed. And they had their bed positioned exactly where ours was positioned. And in fact, I had a ghost dog, jump up on my side of the bed. You know how a dog, if they're small, they try to climb up and they miss. And so then their claws grab and pull down the covers on, or on, you know, the sheets on your right-hand side. And so I had that happen to me, and I actually felt that too. But I actually also had I hear of these ghost animal occurrences all the time. I actually had one with that was the creepiest one, was again over in Europe, where I was laying in bed and I had just gotten over that traumatic experience I had in one of the castles I stayed in. And I just wanted a breather and just wanted some relief. And of course there was 80 dogs that had passed, they died on the property, because that's what the owner did back in the day, was he had a lot of hunting dogs and took pride in it. But one of the dogs obviously came through the window, deceased, and was like really crawling on the bed, like it was creeping towards me to try to figure out, you know, who was on the bed. Absolutely freaked me out. I started kicking the sheets and everything, but it just was the creepiest feeling I ever had. Oh, yeah.
That would freak me out.
Well, and you don't know what it is. It feels like, you know how a cougar kind of just kind of crawls really like that? Well, it wasn't a cougar. I know it was probably a dog, but I will tell you that absolutely freaked me out. So, say, Pete, let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, I've got a few more questions, if you don't mind, I want to ask you.
Sure.
Because I feel like we've just really got started on this. So let's take a quick pause here and go into silence, and we'll be back in just a moment.
The worms crawl in, the worms crawl out, they crawl all over your dirty snout, your chest.
My name is David Walton. I am a vocal performer for What Are You Afraid Of? Horror and Paranormal Show. And I have carried the burden of a terrible secret. I am actually what is offensively called a ghost. For years now, I have concealed my ectoplasmic existence from my friends and family, in fear of a common prejudice against ghosts, or what we like to call the disembodied. I have existed frightened of being discovered, unable to do physical acts that the embodied take for granted, such as walking a squirrel, or drinking a glass of vitamin E milk fresh squeezed from a whale. I grew depressed and even considered acts of self-harm or reincarnation, which is suicide for the disembodied. Such movies as Ghostbusters and its sequels drove my feelings of disenfranchisement, and I began looking for help only to encounter painful exorcisms in the houses I haunted. Then I met two good people, it says here, Fox and Phil, at What Are You Afraid Of? Horror and Paranormal. And they helped me take control of my own life. Now, it is my choice whether I wish to make phantom bangs in the night, appear at the foot of your bed in darkness, or make your walls bleed. If you are a disembodied person like I am, and you're living a lie, What Are You Afraid Of? Can help you too. They are on at 9 p.m. on Friday nights at Para X Radio, leaving plenty of time for midnight haunting activities, and can be found on all major podcast services. Listen to their paranormal stories, interviews, humorous sketches and horror fiction to know that you are not alone. And if you are a member of the embodied, don't forget, you are only a single heart attack or tumour away from becoming one of us. This is David Walton. See you on the other side. Or as I call it, this side.
And that is the end of a perfect day.
Your source for everything paranormal. Para X. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal. Para X.
This interview will be continued next week with Mr. Peter Haviland. Please stay tuned as you listen to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. Thank you for listening tonight.
Thank you for joining us this evening. Dr. Schutz welcomes your emails and paranormal stories. Visit her website at www.paranormaluniversalpress.com for contact information, or go to amazon.com to view her books searching under Paranormal Encounters. Thanks for listening. Take care, and until next time,
be careful what you wish for.
The script, vocal talent, and music compositions in this podcast program are copyrighted. As a disclaimer, this podcast episode or parts thereof may not be reproduced, reposted, or transmitted in any form without the express permission from the producer and company, Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, or Para-X Radio Network. Any opinion or claim made in any podcast episode by the host or guest does not necessarily represent the viewpoints of Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, Para-X Radio Network, or its sponsors. Properties mentioned in any podcast are publicly known to be haunted or have been discovered to have unexplained occurrences. If you are a ghost seeker, please take precautions and respect people's properties by not trespassing.